In Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, Bob Mercer.
Well, good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's enjoyed this wonderful weather we're having, and we're good to go here. Pull up a chair, get a cup of coffee. I would recommend tonight, that before I start right off the top, get-go here, that if you might find a piece of paper and a pencil, because we got some folks on that are going to give you some information tonight that you might want to write down. You might not, but you might, so it would be easier if you were planning on that, and we're kind of ready to take the information when it comes. Our monologue tonight, the Outdoor Digest, is brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Maine's premier outdoor magazine. I like it because I like the writing. And we're going to talk about writing some tonight, and so that fits right into the narrative. The digest tonight, every once in a while, something that perks my interest, it perks me up and tickles my fancy. This last week, we have a situation in Maine where the number of people that are hunting and fishing and so on and so forth are kind of dwindling. And there was an article in the Sporting Journal, a fellow that was upset by a piece that was in the journal, and I don't even know what the piece was. I can remember reading it, but I'm not sure where it was. But he was upset to the point that he thought that he might drop his subscription to the Sporting Journal. And we've run into this situation at our Rod and Gun Club, where we've decided not to do something, and somebody gets upset and says, well, that's it, I'm not coming anymore. And I've also said this with the Sportsman Alliance. And with the NRA and those types of things where people, something will upset them, they say, well, that's it, I'm done. Folks, we can't afford to do that. There's so few of us, and there's so much at stake in the numbers game that we need the numbers. And you have organizations as big as Sportsman Alliance or the NRA or small organizations like our local Rod and Gun Club in Bucksport, we need all the members we've got. We can't afford to lose any. We have to understand that we're not going to agree with everything all the time. And so when things set us off a little sideways, we have to just express our displeasure and let it go at that, because we need the people. We can't afford to lose anybody. And to quote Forrest Gump, that's all I've got to say about that. And we have two fine guests tonight that I'm looking forward to dealing with. I'm a reader, and at my state of maturity, I find I do as much of my outdoor adventures through reading as I do from actually participating anymore. I quote a little story on myself. A couple of years ago, I was getting ready to go deer hunting, and I was getting ready to walk out the door, and I had my gun and my vest and my hat and all the stuff I was supposed to have. Then I said to myself, self, do you want to deal with a dead deer today? And the answer came back, no. I didn't want to deal with a dead deer today. And so I said, well, I'll just take a little walk up the road here. And then I said, well, if you do that, there's going to be a dumb one step right out in front of you. I'm going to be dealing with a dead deer. So I went back, took my hat and coat off, hung it up, put my gun back on the rack, and sat down and took out a book and began to read about hunting and fishing. So we have two folks today that are involved in that type of a situation. And they've each written books. And I'm particular about the books I read. I like books that I read that will put me there. I have favorite authors here. Some of them main authors, some of them not. But back long, Bill Gagan, who used to, back before Bud Levitt was the outdoor writer for the Bangor Daily News, wrote wonderful books about Maine. And Louise Dickinson Rich. And later in our time, Tom Hennessy has some wonderful writing. And the kind of in the mode of Louis L'Amour. Louis L'Amour is one of my favorites, and the fact that when he talks about the cowboys sitting around the fire and everything, you can smell the smoke. And I look forward to that kind of writing. Well, the two folks that we have on here tonight fit right into that mold. They're both local writers, and I assume, Lori, that you're there.
I am here, yes. Thanks, Bob.
Yep. Well, we have Lori Chandler from down in Bremen, and she knew I was a real Mainer because I didn't say Bremen. And we have Roger Green from Bucksport, and they've both written wonderful books backdropped on Maine or outdoor adventures. And I'll give you a little bit of background, then I'll allow them to add on. Lori wrote her first book, was called Upward, and it's the solo through paddle of the Northern Forest Canoe Trail. Now, she paddled solo from Old Forge, New York, to Fort Kent. Now, you think about that just a second. And I think in her book she said there was like 65 portages, considering about 125 miles worth of portage and 740 miles of canoeing. And then she wrote another book called Woods and Waters, A Journey Through the Maine National Monument. And that chronicled traveling solo again from Subumic down to Grindstone. And that was just a short trip, about 240 miles, that she did solo also. Now, the other guest we have is Roger Green. Roger is a forester, and he wrote a book that calls In the Company of Trees, The Forester's Journey Through Trees and Time. Now, both of these folks wrote wonderful books, and in just a few moments when we talk to them, we're going to give you the opportunity to write down the information you need to write down if you find their stories interesting. And so that you can get some information, so you can get one or some of these books. Lori, let's start with you. In that, first off, what possessed you to decide, well, I guess I'll take off a little bit of time and paddle 750 miles?
Well, I definitely worked up to it gradually. I moved to Maine almost 20 years ago now. And I got married again, and my husband took me to the Allagash for our honeymoon, and I just fell in love with it, and I fell in love with wilderness tripping. I had grown up doing a lot of tent camping, but never journeys like that through such remote areas. And when he unfortunately passed away, I started doing trips on my own, and initially they were just day trips, and then I went and did the Moose River boat trip. And then I decided to paddle across Maine as a fundraiser for the Maine Children's Cancer Program. And that was actually on the Northern Forest Canoe Trail. It was about half of the trail. And when I got that under my belt, I really started to dream about doing the entire trail. And I've always really been comfortable out in the wilderness. And to me, these long journeys are simply putting together shorter journeys. And if you're comfortable out there for a week or even just for a weekend, you can put those experiences together and do something longer. It's just a question of keeping on going day after day. And I really always wanted to write. And so I started journaling on these trips, and I keep a really detailed journal. So then I have that to work from when I get ready to sit down and write the book.
Wow. Now, Roger, Lori's book chronicles her journeys. Now, Roger's book is semi-biographical fiction. Would that be an accurate description?
Yeah, I think they call it creative nonfiction.
Yeah. Now, Roger is a forester, and he's the forester for our land trust down in Bucksport, the Great Pond Mountain Conservation Trust. But tell us a little bit, Roger, about the genesis of stuff. What caused you to think, well, I guess I'll sit down and write a book?
Well, it started about 22 years ago on a fishing trip, as it would be, in northern Maine with a friend of mine. And we used to tell each other stories of our experiences and whatnot, and some of them were pretty funny and some are a little different, I suppose. But I got to thinking that maybe we ought to write a book, or at least that was my friend's suggestion. So I started jotting down some notes, and as I say, I worked on it for about 20 years and finally finished it in 2020 in the fall, and found a publisher and got it printed.
Well, yeah. Now, Lori, what is there in your educational background that would make you feel as though that you were capable of writing a book?
I really don't have a degree at all in anything related to English or composition, but I do have a degree in biology and I'm also a forester by training. And as I began my forestry career, I got really interested in forest research and genetic tree improvement. So I had done a lot of technical writing, and I was always the person that volunteered to put together the newsletter or to write the press release. So I'm comfortable with writing, and I just really embraced it, I guess, because it's really the first creative thing I've ever done. I'm not an artist. I'm not musical. But to grab hold of this craft of writing and being able to just work on, particularly a book, which you can work on for, usually it takes me about 2 years to write a book and get it to the finished edited version. I just found that I really enjoyed doing that, and hopefully I did a good job. I try to write the kind of book that I like to read, where you feel like you come along on the adventure, but as you're going along, you make discoveries, be they wildlife or history or people you meet along the way, and you weave all of that into the story of the trip, and I really try to do that. And I think the feedback I get from people is that they feel like they have been right there with me.
Well, that's good. That's really interesting. Now, fortunately, time flies so quickly. This is so interesting. We've got to take a little break here and so that we can earn a little bit of money for the company. We'll be right back in just a few second or two. I should say that as we continue back on here, if anybody out there has any questions that inspired from hearing Lori or Roger speak on the radio tonight, you can contact us at 1-800-966-1039. That's 1-800-966-1039. Now, Roger, I know that your experience is about the same as Lori's, is about what made you think you could write, but because you had to write a lot of compositions and stuff like that. So I think I'd ask you to give us a little, like Lori's is a trip, but give us a little background on the, like, kind of a little bit of the gist of the whet our appetite for the story of your book.
Well, like Lori, I don't have any specified training in either English or composition, but this really just proves that foresters can do just about anything. So I wasn't afraid to try it. And I guess in trying to put together a book that's coherent and as an easy read, what I was trying to do was to get people to have interesting stories that take them right to the place and then also provide a little bit of information about what forests and forestry and managing forests is like, so that when they finish the book, they'd have a sense that maybe they learned something.
So you want to give us a little bit a synopsis of your little story there?
Yep. This is a story about a certain place in the northern forest, a little bit of history, a little bit of humor, and events in the lives of working people who depend on the forest as a natural resource for their local economy. And it's set not specifically in Maine, but in the northern forest somewhere, because I wanted this to appeal to anybody that lives within the northern forest belt that runs from Prince Edward Island all the way out to the Lake States. And it's a short history of early exploration to more recent times, where two old foresters, one whose name's Sage Duff and the other is Oracle Cambium, who work for a variety of interesting clients and are developing a relationship with a special place called Geezer Pond. The story has a thread of managing a lot of forest intertwined with amusing vignettes about the people and things that happen in the woods and to the principal characters, yielding a glimpse of what it takes to grow and nurture a forest for several purposes. Completing the cycle are the rehabilitation of two old lodges on Geezer Pond itself, which is the place where all fishermen want to go when they die. The fishing is just superb.
When you started this project, this is something that I don't know that we've talked about before, but I was going to ask you, why Geezer Pond? When you invented a pond,
yep.
Why Geezer Pond?
We got to talking about our advancing age, my friend and I, while we were fishing, and the new things that occur every time you get out of bed in the morning and find a new little tick or a kink that you need to work out. And we thought maybe it would be a good idea to have a couple old geezers
okay,
in the story. But the story begins historically back in the 1840s when the first surveys were done in the area. And there was an old fellow that worked on the boundary lines with the original surveyors who decided to stay there, build a camp and hunt fish and trap and live there as kind of a hermit, and everybody called him the Geezer.
Okay, that would do it.
There's it.
Now, Lori, in your case, and I read your books, it interested me, and I've seen other people do this, but not often. But every chapter began with some kind of a quote, something that was philosophical or historical or all kinds of different things. It must have taken you years to research all these quotes.
I just love collecting quotes, and I really gear up to it when I'm working on the book itself, and it's just so fun trying to match a quote to either the theme of the chapter or to an event that happens in the chapter. Like my new book, I kind of went really the long way around to Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, which is over by Baxter, and I was on Webster Lake going across the top of Baxter State Park, and this doe and fawn came out and just sort of walked the circuit of the pond while I was sitting right out there in my canoe. And I felt like they were accepting of my presence, and it was just a real special moment. And so I used part of a poem by Robert Frost called Two Look at Two. But the scripts, they come from scripture. They come from a lot of my favorite writers growing up, like Louisa May Alcott or Tolkien. And it's just matching them to the chapter is just really a very fun part of the book for me.
So you looked and, you know, it wasn't the type of thing of Google a quote that fits this. It was just it was stuff that you actually researched.
In some cases I Google, but a lot of times it's something that I already, you know, in my mind somewhere there's like a glimmer that didn't Tolkien say something about a secret path? And so then I go and look for the quote. So a lot of times it's like that.
Wow. So you read a lot also.
I do. And yeah. I love to read stories of people's travels, not necessarily just by canoe, but also sailing books or through hiking books. I'm really very much influenced by Sigurd Olsen and his writing. And my brother gave me a book of his called The Lonely Land, which was a story of a trip up on the Churchill River in Canada. And it just came at a really important time to me as I was getting ready to do my through paddle. And so I was able to use a couple of quotes from his works.
Right.
Which in that case, I had to pay for them. So you have to be really careful. And a lot of this, Roger knows this too, you learn a lot of the mechanics of publishing a book, like getting permissions, you learn it by doing. And so you have to be careful about that.
Exactly.
Now, Roger, who was there a person? I'll put this out to each of you, and Roger can go first. Was there a person that you read that inspired you to write this type of a book?
Well, I'm not sure. Probably several, really. as a young fellow, I read a lot of Thornton Burgess's books, which are about nature and did the different aspects of it. But then, like most of us of my age group, we read articles in Sports Afield, Field and Stream, Outdoor Life, and the like. And a lot of the writers for those publications have written books, and I read a lot of those.
How about you, Lori? Was there some particular writer that inspired you to follow that trail?
Well, I want to mention someone that the listeners may never have read, and his name is Alan Kesselheim. He wrote a book on wilderness paddling, a guide, so you may know him that way. But he and his wife, Mary Pat Zitzer, did 2-year-long trips across Canada through Alberta and Saskatchewan, and one of them they went up into the Northwest Territories. And that they weren't going solo, obviously, because there were two of them. But within their core of themselves, they were alone most of the time. And just his writing was just so poetic and soulful, and I felt like he did such a good job of putting me there, not only in what it looked like and felt like and smelled like, but also internally what he was feeling. And so I kind of aspired to write that type of book. And of course, I've been influenced by lots of other people too, but I would definitely recommend his books.
Now, one of the things that people would ponder, like I know my dearly beloved did when I was explaining to her about Lori's book, and I know having been around Roger, he has the same things. What is there about, and I'll have Lori go first this time, what is there about being alone in the wilderness that draws you to that?
Well, for one thing, I just enjoy my own company, and I like the autonomy on a long trip like that of being by myself, in that if I want to stop and watch wildlife or take a lot of photographs or just soak in a place, I can do that. And it's up to me to decide if I want to be crazy and paddle in a rainstorm as long as there's no lightning, which I often do. So I like that part of it. I also feel as though I can really immerse myself into the place and write and capture my feelings a lot better when I'm by myself. Am I allowed to read something if I promise it's really short?
Sure, you can.
I don't usually read too much from my books, but I anticipated this question. So I was on the Nauhegan River in Vermont and writing about what it was like to be alone. You can travel for hours and hear only the sounds that are always part of the wild. Gradually, your mind quiets and all that is other fades away. You become truly present in the time and place where you find yourself. Suddenly, your alert senses notice things you otherwise might miss. Colors, textures, or the exquisite detail of a single flower petal. And if you're lucky, you reach that moment when you understand that you too belong. You touch the water. The paddle slices in and out. A tiny whirlpool drifts behind, and you simply are a part of the flowing river.
That's really interesting. In the fact that I have a very good friend of mine that was a research anthropologist for Harvard and Harvard College, and I was telling her about this book, and I emailed her that exact quote.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah. I actually preached the sermon this morning at our community church as the pastor was gone, and I used that quote in my sermon. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Now, Roger, what is it? Like, I know that in your, like, surveying woodlots and stuff, you have had the time to be able to spend some time alone in the woods, in the wilderness, and we've talked about that. What is it that draws you specifically to being alone in the woods as opposed to being with other people?
Well, I've spent a lot of time alone. Most of the time I'm in the woods, I'm alone. Have been for the last 50 or so years. But I think it's the serendipity. You have to slow down a little bit. And as I've gotten older, I've certainly slowed down.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Yeah. But as you slow down, you begin to notice things that you wouldn't if you're hurrying. And when you stop, and I'm a hunter and a fisherman also, when you just stop and look at things around you and just let what happens, you get a sense of becoming part of the forest. And if I can read a short passage from one of mine, one of my characters is looking out the window at a winter scene, and here's what he's thinking. There was a certain softness in what I could see out the window. Something like the arrangement of colors was just right, so as not to present too stark a contrast. The grays of the leafless hardwoods, the various greens of the cedar, pine, and spruce, all blended together naturally, like an impressionist painting. The view seemed to say, relax, don't hurry, it isn't necessary. Don't worry, be calm and happy.
So there you go. Those two things about sum it up. Now, what I want to do now, we get an advertisement coming up, and so we're going to take a second here and sell some more products and put it on our show. And when we get back, get ready, because I'm going to have Roger and Lori both give you information where you can contact them to get copies of these books if you'd like to have them. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Again, in case we're back, and in case you'd like to call in and ask any questions of either Lori or Roger, the number is 1-800-966-1039. And Lori, before I forget it and we go too far, how about giving the folks some information where they could contact you or wherever in order to get some copies of your books?
All right, Bob. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to our independent bookstores, and not only that, but Outfitters, General Stores. So many places in Maine have generously agreed to carry my book, and Roger and I actually have been partnering up a little bit on book sales, so you can try that. And then I have a website, and it is simply my name. So it's Lori, L-A-U-R-I-E, A is my middle initial, Chandler.com.
And if they go there, they can get that?
And there's a button where you can purchase the books. I also have a blog, and there's an event calendar and some information about me. And also, Roger and I both published through Maine Authors Publishing in Thomaston, so they also have a website. So there's several avenues where you can find the books.
And Roger, how about you? How do they contact you for a copy of your book?
Well, I have a website, too, and if you're writing it down, it's Cambium Duff, CambiumDuff.com. Otherwise, you can send me a note that you'd like to request a copy if you're not going to a bookstore at 44 Scotts, S-C-O-T-T-S Lane in Bucksport.
04416.
Right.
And I know we have a wonderful little bookstore in Bucksport where I got copies of these books. Lori pointed out the independent bookstores, I think, is important that we honor those and shop there because, you know, those are shrinking fast.
Yeah, and they're the heart of a community.
And really, it's really important to take care of them. Now, one of my favorite outdoor books. There's some books that I read periodically. I'll read it several times. And one of those books that I have read several times is The Sancalmi Almanac by Aldo Leopold. It was written in the 1930s. And he was the first one. He's credited with inventing the science of ecology, which is tying all of the different ologies together into under one umbrella. And in his book, one of his theses is the the definition of not wilderness, but wildness. And, like, for example, he says that as areas become less wild, the wildest creatures leave first, i.e. the mountain lions, and then the bears, and so on and so forth. Now, to you, Lori, what is there about the difference? What to you would appear the difference between being in the woods and being in the wilderness?
To me, there's a threshold you cross, and I think of it when I'm going down the West Branch, for instance, and I go underneath Hannibal Bridge. It's just like you get to this point where it isn't so easy to get out. It isn't so easy to get help. And you look around you, and everything is very much the same as it was centuries ago. And we don't really have too much true wilderness. Most of the land has been impacted, but there's the Allagash is managed for its wilderness character. And to me, it's when you cross that threshold to the point where you have to depend upon yourself. And that is where you really start to feel like you become part of the land around you and are accepted. And I just really enjoy that.
Now, how about you, Roger? What is the difference between being in the woods and being in the wilderness?
The wild places, to me, are where the sounds of civilization aren't. And the sounds that are endemic to wooded areas are all you hear.
Yeah. Now, I do that. Like, to me, in Maine, some of the wildest, the most wilderness experience that I have in Maine is some places in Baxter Park.
Yeah, I guess for me it would be a lot of places beyond Baxter Park in the northern part of the state where I've worked before, and in some other states where you're way away from everywhere. Mm-hmm. In the northern part of the state, west of Ashland, you can go for 100 miles or more and not see anything but trees,
right?
Except the occasional logging truck. But yeah, once you're off the road and you're in the woods for a few miles, several sometimes, there's nothing around you, nothing to hear.
And that sense of nothing to hear, it's interesting because if you get in places that there's nothing to hear, I find that sometimes you can hear your own heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. You can hear your throbbing heart.
And you come to rely on yourself in a way that you never would in another place. You are forced to meet challenges and get through them and dig deep within yourself.
That's right. And it's not just getting into the woods, but it's getting out again. And it builds a feeling of self-reliance that you can cook your own lunch, have a nice hot cup of tea if you want to, things of that nature, and know where you're going and know where you are in relation to a lot of other physical features.
And when you do meet people, there are people like Roger, there are people that have the same feelings for that type of place as you do, mm-hmm. and you feel like you've always known them when you start talking.
Shared experience.
Like one of the things I noticed, my favorite things was backpacking in Baxter Park and going to the more remote areas. Like I went to Davis Pond, which was just enthralling. If you've ever been to Chimney Pond, Davis Pond is like that. It's on the north side of the park, except you're the only one there. And I did a solo trip in there one time, because I couldn't get anybody else to go with me, so I said, to heck with it, I'm going anyway. And the interesting part of it, and I think you two can relate to this, you could do anything you wanted to.
Exactly. And no matter how you wind up doing what you're doing, it's okay.
Yeah. I didn't have to say to anybody, do you want to go fishing? Or do you want to take a nap? Or do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the downside of that was it was always my turn.
Yeah, you have to rely on yourself.
You know, whose turn to do the dishes? Mine. Whose turn to cook? Mine.
You talk to yourself a lot, too.
Well.
And one thing you miss out on is the opportunity to share that experience with others. And I do sometimes travel, you know, do travels in the outdoors with groups of people. But the really wonderful thing about writing is you can go by yourself and you can journal and you can take in all these experiences and the serendipities that Roger talked about, and then you can come back home and you can craft that into a book, and it's really wonderful. And then the thought that that book is going to stay, it'll be here even after I'm gone. I'm so honored and awed by that.
I'm honored by the people that want to read my book. It's a really rewarding thing to know that you've put a lot of time into it, and the payback is people that are pleased with what you've written.
Yeah, I think that is really noticeable. Like the part that Lori is about leaving a legacy type of an item, because, you know, people still read Bill Gagin's books. You know, and they still read Louise Dickinson Rich's books. And they certainly still read Louis L'Amour's books. And those folks, I think L'Amour, he's the youngest of the group, and he's been dead for 25, 30 years. And so I think that's leaving that type of a legacy is really something that... You know,
it's important. It's a lot like taking your children when they're young into the woods and showing them about different things, and your grandchildren and your great grandchildren.
Now, Laura, you come from an outdoors family background. Is that not correct?
That is correct. Yes, I always tell people that I'm really lucky, really blessed that I had a family that spent most of their time together, and a lot of the time was outdoors, either fishing or camping or hiking.
Now, that brings up a question. When I read your books, and I read them both just recently because in preparation for doing this, you never mentioned supplementing your diet with fishing.
On both of these long trips, I've taken fishing gear with me at the start of the trip and then found that I just did not have enough energy to have time to fish. It took all I could do to get through the day and to do all that work alone that you were talking about. And it really, really is sad for me because you go to some lovely, beautiful spots and I just really haven't been able to take advantage of that like I wish I could.
Well, then you're going to have to go back.
Well, I'm hoping in retirement for some trips that are journeys, but that involve some camps where you stay for several days at a time. I think that would be really nice.
Yeah.
But being a working person, I'm usually on a timeline these days.
I will tell you that retirement is really great.
I just lost my train of thought. I had something I was going to say. While I regain my train of thought, I think we'll go take another little short break here and introduce the folks. And I suspect that most of the folks that listen to this program right know all about General Appliance.
Yes, he's been sponsoring this show for quite a while.
Yeah, I've been doing off and on for, 10 years or so. And he's always been a sponsor. But that's Al Elkins at General Appliance over there in Brewer at 91 Center Street. And he has one of his gas appliances and composting toilets and all the stuff for real camps. Not summer homes, but real camps where you have a gas refrigerator or a gas range and gas lights and stuff like that. Anything you want to know about gas stuff, he is the person to talk to. He helped me out a lot and explained things. I had a problem with my changing over my Coleman stove from the white gas type of thing to the propane type thing. And he explained to me that you have to understand that you have a container of BTUs. And you don't measure how much gas you have, but how many BTUs you're going to put out over a period of time, which is in direct proportion to the amount of gas you have. But it was helpful to understand that those things just don't go forever, you know. But General Appliances over there in Brewer is a longtime sponsor of this program. And if you have any problems or difficulties with gas appliances, or if you're interested in composting toilets, General Appliances is the place to go. Now, what do you see for in your future for writing, Laura? You have any projects in you're thinking about doing down the road?
Well, one thing I'm doing right now is I was invited by Paul Reynolds to write a column for the Northwood Sporting Journal, as I know you know, because I think that you told me that you read it. And that has been really a good exercise for me. I've been doing it for a little over a year now, and I like the discipline of working on that every month and getting into the routine where I'm writing on a more regular basis. And I'm wondering if I can take some of those articles and some other essays and maybe even some of my poetry and put it into a book, into book form. And that's sort of just to tide me over until I do get to retirement, which is only a year or two away. And then I would definitely like to do another long trip, but I'm not sure where it will be.
You're going to run into that same category. I chastise our kid V. Paul all often about being a writer like he is the only time that you can get paid for the same job twice. The fact that he writes a column for the Ellsworth American and so on and so forth like that and gets paid for it, then he saves all those columns and puts together into a book and sells it to the rest of you and gets paid for it again.
We're clever.
So that's a pretty good deal. Now, Roger, I think you also have in mind something that you're working on to publish at a later date.
Yes, I do. I'm working on a second book now, which is going to be a series of short stories and some verse. And just so you know that I'm not getting too serious about this, it's called The Geezer Pond Forester's Outhouse Companion and Book of Verse. That should be out sometime next year, I think.
So it's interesting. Now, let's revisit that again. Laurie said, and Roger, you said also, both of you include verse poetry in your later books. Why the attraction to poetry? We'll go with Laurie first.
I've tried doing some of it, and I enjoy how concise it has to be and the challenge of trying to get just the right word, which you have to do anyway in your writing of a book or writing prose, but you really have to do it with the poetry. And so far, I've only written probably three or four poems that I'm truly satisfied with, but I'm really inspired by Mary Oliver, and I would like to try to attain her level of skill in being able to bring you to a place and feel what she's feeling in so few words. So that's what I would like to do, and I'd like the book to be alternating between essays and poems.
So and I'll throw this part out to Roger, and then I'm going to come back to you with the same thing, Laura, so you can think of it. When you write a book or write this material, Roger, be it poetry or books, does it just flow out of you like water out of a faucet? Or do you have to think about every single word and sentence and paragraph and so on and so forth?
Yes, to both. I have a place where I spend my morning drinking my first cup of coffee, where I can look out the window to my little back wooded patch. And that's a great source of inspiration. And for verse poetry, sometimes you have to capture the essence of what it is that you're thinking. And there are some mornings when it just rolls into my head and I can write it down. And there are other mornings when I have to really work at it. But either way, you have to go back over it again just to make sure the words are right and the meaning is conveyed succinctly.
So you have spend time picking individual words to put the thought process out and not just allowing the words to come out as willy-nilly as they may.
Yes.
Okay. And your point, Lori, how do you parse your words? How do you, now, I a famous somebody that I read said Webster's dictionary is full of words, but there's very few people who can put them into an order that makes them that somebody would want to read. So
That's true.
How do you put your words in an order that would tantalize somebody like me and make me want to read it?
Well, I'm fortunate because I have the journal. So usually I start when I'm getting ready to do a chapter and I retype what I had in my journal. And then I will write the paragraphs fairly quickly using that journal information as a basis. And I would say the smaller you're looking at is as you, when you go from looking at a paragraph to looking at a sentence or even just a phrase, the smaller the number of words, the more time you spend fine-tuning it. And I use a thesaurus a lot, and I actually had a friend tell me, use the thesaurus to find the best word you can for the one that you're trying to replace, and then put that word into the thesaurus and see what its options are, and you kind of follow that trail. And so I do that a lot. I also sometimes will search my manuscript to make sure I'm not overusing one particular word. But I, on certain paragraphs especially, where I'm trying to evoke a feeling or describe a really special place, I take a lot of time to choose the words.
Now, Roger, I'd assume that you have to do a fair amount of self-editing, and the fact that I've written a couple of little columns for the Sporting Journal and stuff like that, and I give my wife to read it, to edit it for me, and she'd laugh at me. She says, you could say that in half the words. And yeah. I have a tendency to write like I talk, which has a tendency to be a lot.
Yep. In the process of getting my manuscript ready for submission, I basically reread it about 18 times and cut out big chunks to make it more coherent and easily understandable. When you're writing verse, you do the same thing, but with an economy of words. And as Lori says, to find the right word, using a thing like a thesaurus is a big, big, big help.
Yeah. Like one of the things, one of my favorite paragraphs, and I should have brought the book so I could read it, the whole thing, but Bill Gagan, in the introduction to his one of his books, started off with a paragraph. He was at his cabin on Herman Pond in the wintertime, and the paragraph started out with, the witches of the wind were screeching and screaming through the woods, or through under the eaves. Yeah. And where in the world somebody came up with that term, the witches of the wind? When you read it, you knew exactly what was being conveyed.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, what you're trying to do is to get a picture in somebody's mind, so that it pops in there as soon as they read it.
And yeah. To write a word or phrase that's going to linger with them
that's
the way
right.
that did with you.
Yep.
Now, bringing us to a conclusion here, I'll start this one, Lori, then I'm going to go to this, Roger, because I want you both to react to it. When I'm writing something, or oftentimes when you're doing something, even tying flies, for example, anything, striving for perfection, how do you know when it's time to say it's done?
That's really difficult for me because I am a perfectionist. And I remember in particular in this latest book about the monument, I really delved into the geology of the Appalachian Caledonian mountain range because the International Appalachian Trail follows that mountain range all the way across to Europe and Morocco. So I had to learn how this came to be. And I spent an entire weekend just getting a couple pages the way I wanted them. And my dad says to me, perfection is the enemy of good enough. I don't know if he came up with it or somebody else said that, but in other words, he's telling me at some point you have to say it's good enough, but that's hard for me.
How about you, Roger? We get about a minute.
Yeah. I think the best thing to do is to try not to say the same thing twice. And if you can make it succinct and get the meaning across to your satisfaction, then it's time to quit.
Well, I want to take just a moment here to thank you two both for spending some time with me and with our audience tonight. I know I found it very entertaining, and I hope that some of the other folks out there found it entertaining also and would be contacting you or going to their local bookstore and taking care of getting a copy of Upwards, or let me look at the title again here. In the Company of Trees, or Through Woods and Waters, and enjoy them as much as I have. I want to thank you for being with us tonight, and with that, we'll say we'll see you next time on Maine Outdoors.